60. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Ooh, boy. I'm coming in a little even hot on my end of the thing. Okay, 602-508-0960. We're going to talk about cars for the next couple hours, and you're welcome to join us. If you have an argument you want me to settle between husband and wife or husband and son or whoever, I'm a good guy to do that. You can also send me an email, and I'll answer it at mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. If you'll leave me a phone number, I'd prefer just to call you, and I'm going to call you from a blocked line for obvious reasons. I can use my cell phone, and I can do it on my way to, you know, fix a car or feed my horses or something like that. So I can pull that off. I've been in the auto repair industry for, since 1973 when I was a gas station jockey. And then in 1979, I opened up my first gas station. And then I went in an independent repair shop. And I'm in the same facility that I've been in since 1994. So in 1994, we built a new facility. And here, here it is, 2019, and we're still there. So car stuff is difficult at best. And so I'm going to give you the very best advice I can give you. I've been inundated with letters that start like this. I took my car into the shop. Now, there are three kinds of shops. There's dealers, there's chain stores, and there's independents. But I'm going to lump them all into shops so that I don't beat up one category. And my intention is not to do that. So I took my car in, and they told me I needed new hoses. When I looked at my receipt, they had done new hoses 60,000 miles before that. What do you think, Mark? My answer is I don't do my hoses at 60,000. It would be a decision. Squeeze them. Are they soft and pliable? Do they crunch? Are they swollen? Otherwise, it's clamped at the radiator, but then as soon as it leaves the clamp, it's swollen, obviously swollen. Perhaps you drove a whole lot of miles, or that 60,000 has been over 10 years. That might place a different tilt on it. But 60,000 miles under normal driving conditions is about 4 years. And that's not out of my comfort zone. But then again, I can't see the car. So that's the kind of conversation we likely have. The ladies seem to get a lot of, you're due for this or you're due for that. And when you're anywhere, it is perfectly acceptable for you to say, let's get my owner's manual out. And why don't you show me where that's in my owner's manual? And that may not be something they'll oblige you with. It may be something they don't want anything to do with. Not too long ago, a friend of mine who has my cell phone number took his car in, and they told him they didn't need a bunch of work, and he asked them to just simply fax me or send me or email me or message me an estimate. And it never happened. So he called back and he said to the young lady service writer, I didn't get it. Perhaps maybe it was my fault. Could you send it again? And she said, well, no, I've given that to you verbally. And that is a huge red flag. Because in order to give you an estimate, we have to combine all the parts, all the clamps, all the hoses, all the coolant, all the oil, air filter, all that stuff, whatever we're bidding. We have to go in and look up the labor, and then you can say, is that an out-the-door price? Most of us will add 10% to the ticket for shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. Now, in Arizona, sales tax is like 10%, so a lot of us just do 15% and sometimes 20%, which ensures that we're going to be under our estimate. But I find it amazing that somebody's not willing to send an estimate. And I think he also said, just write your name down and your phone number on that estimate for me. And that wasn't going to happen. Now, in the defense of service writers in many facilities, they kind of run the show. And the technician may or may not be involved in a lot of stuff. But the technician can go to the front office and say, this guy needs hoses. And the service writer, if they don't go back and say, show me, then they're going to take his word for it and they're going to call you. But see, he has to come to the party with some data. It's possible that the service writer's job is to look up the list of parts that the technician gave them that need to be replaced, upper hose, lower hoses, four heater hoses, clamps, coolant, that kind of stuff. That's possible. It's also possible that the service writer is responsible for looking up the labor. But I promise you this, 99 times out of 100, the technician will look up the labor. He wants to ensure that he's paid for all of his work. And it may very well say this, the fan belts pay an hour, but if it has an electric fan, you add 3/10 of an hour, so it's really 1.3. The technician knows that. The service writer doesn't know that. So that's why the technicians, to ensure they're paid, however they're paid, then they'll look up their labor. What also happens is the labor's 1.3, and the technician will say, no, it's really worth 1.5. That happens. Not every minute of every day, not at every shop, but it happens. So you asking for a written estimate, and please be specific on what hoses you're replacing, any other ancillary parts you're putting in it, which should be clamps and hoses, clamps and coolant, and maybe a radiator cap. And then just give me some kind of a labor number for the whole thing, and if you just kind of total it out, or I'll just, you know, I'll add 15% to the ticket if you don't, and I'll know what I'm getting. And it's okay to say out the door, I want to know how much I'm going to write my check for before I leave home. That really puts us on the spot, and that's not an unreasonable request. Again, we already have that number. Now, there's a lot of us, like I said, they're going to add 15% to your bill. That gives us, if we need a radiator cap, we got the money. We got the shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. We got it covered. And when we come in under the estimate, you really believe we're heroes. And that's kind of true. We did come in under our estimate. Fast story, and then I'm going to get to the callers. I don't know how long ago I got a call from a young man way east of Arizona. And he said, you know, my mother's been telling me about the car she's been driving and all the money she spent at your shop, and I think you're ripping her off. That's a tough call to take without using bad words. So I said, well, let me just do some research. Tell me first what your mother's name is. And he did, and I pulled it up, and I said, she has quite a few work orders. I said, it's important to know that your mom's car is like 20 years old and she has 200,000 miles on it. I know that. I said, okay, well, let me just do some research. Give me your phone number and I'll call you back. So this is the conversation when I call him back. I've personally reviewed every single repair order, and staff has not sold your mother any duplications of services or products. All of them are spaced appropriately over the 200,000 miles the car has. But more important, I added up all the estimates, and I added up all the actual tickets. So I have two different numbers here, what we bid and what your mother paid. We left over $500 on the table between those two numbers. So we bid $500 higher over the entire relationship than she actually paid. So young man, I don't know if you're a son or a grandson or if you're, you know, what who you are, I think it's important for you to understand that we left $500 on the table. And if we were going to rip off Mrs. Jones, we wouldn't have done that. So I think I'd much rather deal with her from this point on. So perhaps you could share your concerns with her and have her call me. And I'm prepared for that meeting. That doesn't happen all the time. And frankly, that phone call, probably one in the last 5 years of something like that. So it's not a real common one. But you understand the point. It's nice for you to get it for less than you thought you were going to get it. And it's nice for us to have a little bit of fluff in there so I don't have to call you for an $8 radiator cap. Those are the kinds of pros and cons. Okay, we got a caller. Who would that be?
That would be Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. My question is there a significant reduce in value after a car's been in an accident? I have a 2017 Nissan Versa. It's got 25,000 miles on it. Just got in an accident. It's in the shop, and they wrote the bill for $4,300. Now, is that going to show up on a Carfax and affect my resale value of the vehicle down the road?
Yes. Who's paying for your car repair, the other driver or your insurance company?
The other driver.
Okay.
Well, I'm going through my insurance, and they're going to submit it to the other driver who is at fault.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You're in the catbird seat on this one because your insurance company's in the middle. And they're gonna hopefully, depending on the insurance company, hopefully they're gonna stand up for you. But you need to put your insurance company on notice that if this was the other way around, how much would you pay for depreciated value?
Exactly.
And I gotta tell you something, $4,000 paint and body bill doesn't have a lot on it. Did you hit the corner, one of the corners, or did you get hit in the door? I mean, where's the extent of the damage?
She pulled out, hit the front. It's a front bumper, front fender, and paint the front bumper, fender, and passenger door, and you know some A-arm and some minor stuff like that.
Yeah, that's just not a real big hit, and I don't know the answer, but your insurance company will know the answer, and so it's perfectly okay for you to talk to your insurance company and prod them to make sure you're compensated correctly. Now, if they compensate you for $4,000, they're going to give you $4,000 for your depreciated value, and they probably won't give you that because their repairs, they're going to pay for the repairs and put you back, in their opinion, the way you were. But you're right. The Carfax is probably going to show that. So you just need to figure out what that number is, and you can also get on the internet and go to KellyBlueBook.com and tell them what kind of car you have and find out what your private part, where your trade-in value is, your private party is, your private party, and then a brand new car. I think there's actually four categories, and I've missed one of them. So that'll help you. But good that you didn't get hurt. Did the airbags deploy?
No, luckily. Okay. I like to say it's. You know, that's one thing too. So,
yeah,
I kind of thought there might have been some depreciated value because of an accident. So I'm going to try and have my insurance pass that on to the bill.
Yeah, and it is a negotiable number. So
if
they give you $880, you can counter them, or you can say to the other insurance company, listen, just buy the car from me at today's value. Buy it from me.
Yeah.
And
well, it's being fixed.
Yeah. I understand, but if you said if we can't agree on depreciated value, just buy the car at the value it was before the accident.
Oh, I see.
And we'll be done. I'm gonna just mention I don't do anything. Just be quiet. But the four insurance companies that I find, and I work with all of them every day, that the tie goes to the runner. Okay, they're more customer oriented than other ones. Geico, Liberty Mutual, USAA, and Farm Bureau. Those are the now, in my opinion. Oh, there's lots of them out there, but in my opinion, those are the four where the tie goes to the runner, and they're not going to get into a battle over stupid stuff. And oftentimes they'll write a check for a small amount of money, and they're not going to fight it if somebody wants. Window tint on a window they didn't have window tint on, that's probably going to be something that's going to be just handled. So don't say the name of your insurance company. We're not going to go there, but I just thought I'd pass that on. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, give me a call. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and real quick, we got a couple callers, but I got a little business to take care of. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road. When you name your company Strictly Diesel, what that means is they handle foreign, domestic, light diesel trucks. They're really good on light diesel trucks, but they're exceptionally good on the Duramax, the Ford Powerstroke, and the Dodge Ram Cummins. They're really good at that. So if you've got a problem with your diesel truck and nobody can fix it, or people are willing to guess with your money, may I suggest Strictly Diesel and Repair, Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. You can go to their website and also shop a lot of fancy parts for your diesel that they sell, but they comment on them as well. Let's go to the phones. Nick, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, I called last week regarding my steering wheel on my Z3 manual transmission.
Uh-huh.
I forgot to get a recommendation from you. Who can I go to that you can recommend will be able to determine what my problem is? Everybody else wants to charge me $200 before they give me any type of information.
Okay. First of all, I think I told you this as well. Most of us are going to look at the steering wheel and we're going to go, boy, that could be a couple of different parts inside. So we have to take the column apart. But most of us are certainly experienced enough to say, Nick, it's not going to be any less than this. And it shouldn't be any more than this. And when we say it shouldn't be any more than this, we're thinking we're going to have to buy a used column, steal some parts out of it, and put it in yours. That's the worst case scenario. What part of town do you live in?
Bell and Pima at McDowell Mountain Ranch.
Okay. I'd go to Blackwell at 40th Street and Greenway.
Blackwell.
40th Street and Greenway.
40th Street. And Greenway.
Yeah, and tell
you
him,
have
Mark.
Number there?
No, I don't. But you can go on. You can get on the web or something like that, or just call information.
Okay.
You tell him when you meet him that Mark Salem says that this is a job that's probably well out of his capabilities, but I told you he would try, and I promise you he can do what you want him to do.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
And to you too, Nick. Thank you very much, Brad. You're up next. How can I help you?
Well, Mark, I've got a question here. I've got a 2005 Ford Escape. It's got 75,000 miles on it, but very low mileage. The concern is this car has had literally nothing done to it ever. I mean, it still has original belts and hoses on it.
Okay.
So what should I be looking at if we want to take a trip to, like, out of state a little bit?
Okay, it's a 05 Escape?
Yes, so it's 15 years old. It was bought early in or late 2004. It's actually been on the road for 15 years.
Okay. And 25,000 miles.
75,000.
Oh, okay. Okay. We're a little closer. Okay. Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you had regular oil changes done?
Yes, regular oil changes.
Okay.
No, I don't think any of the other fluids have ever been changed. I think it has the original coolant in it even, which I'm a little concerned about.
Okay.
I think I've heard you say before that can be corrosive on part.
And you're going to hit the nail on the head because the cooling system, the belts and the hoses, they're not made to last this long. And so if you wanted to go to California and take my kids to Disneyland, I'm not letting you. So I would take it into an oil change facility for the oil change, and I would say to him, I want to go on a 2,000-mile trip. I want you to look it over good. But I'm thinking belts and hoses. I don't care about brakes. How about the tires? Have you replaced them yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the tires are fine.
Good. Good. Because they're.
And the brakes have been done. It's been a few years, but the front pads have been replaced a couple of times.
Okay. So we're done there, and we're not going to do spark plugs, and we don't care much about the other fluids because you're not going to break down because the transmission fluid is, 10,000 past due. And I think if you look in your owner's manual, it's not. So the only thing that's going to
It looks a decent color.
The transmission fluid?
Yeah.
Okay.
It has a nice red color to it still.
Yeah. If it smells good and it doesn't smell burnt and it has a decent color, so it has a cherry color that's virtually, you can see through it, you can see the dipstick marks, underneath the fluid, then that's pretty good. The cooling system is where I'd go. I don't think that you're going to break down because of spark plugs and distributor, have that, or shock absorbers or anything. I think the cooling system is going to be your biggest evil, your biggest prospective evil.
Yeah, that's been my concern. And my other concern with the cooling system is, given the age of a car, I've never had one go that long without a radiator having a leak. Of course, I've always had a lot more miles on the other vehicle. But.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what we all do. You will look at your radiator cap, and let's pretend it's a 15-pound cap. After we put everything on it, we're going to pump it up to maybe 18. And if there's a leak in the radiator, we're going to find it because we're taking it into an area it's never been before. But I want to tell you, if it's not leaking now, there's no reason it should leak later. I'm not worried about the time on, the years and months the car's been old. The 75,000 miles really does tell me that this realistically, this car's 4 years old, with respect to heat cycles. Every time it's been warmed up and cooled down. So you
and
have
it's a daily. It gets driven, you know, 2-3 miles a day, maybe.
Okay. And that's not the best thing for it, because you never really get it out. It's kind of like a horse. You walk him from the barn to the feedlot and then walk him back to the barn. He's never going to run a race, and he's never really going to be a great horse. But if you're going to take a trip, you'll take a trip, and this is the time you run the horse. I don't want you to abuse it, but you're going to be going fast, and so that's okay. If you don't warm up the oil and get it to operating temperature, which is 220 or so, then you're not going to boil the water out of it. And if you don't boil the oil out of it, you get sludge. So you probably have that, but we'll deal with that later. That's not worth it. Cooling system, belts, hoses, and a good flush and probably a new radiator cap, I think you're going to be home free. Okay?
I was going to ask you also, what the given the age of the coolant, has it been damaging the water pump? Should I be concerned with the water pump? Or
nope.
Just let it go until it starts to leak then?
No, get the boogeyman out of your head that the coolant turns acidic. It's true it used to. It's true it used to. But it's been a long time since we've seen that. And I think when you do the pressure test and you look at the belts and the hoses, I think you'll be able to tell quickly if there was any negative effects. I mean, you can take the radiator cap off when it's cold and look inside.
Right.
You'll be able to see some of the tubes with a flashlight. So, I mean, if it looks
clean.
And
the hoses still feel soft and good.
Yeah, you asked me about my opinion, and I'm completely out of my
range. I totally agree.
Yeah. And I follow what I mean. I'm doing 8 years and 80,000 miles on my hoses. Now, if I decide to go longer than I recommend, I recognize the risk.
Right.
My wife will come on the radio and say, don't you want to tell him about the hose that had 110,000 mile that blew on your truck the other day? You know, she'll do something like that. But realistically, I think you're going to be fine. Okay? All right. Thank you,
Mark.
Brad. You betcha. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, Kurtz Auto Repairs, I-17 and Bell Road. He's a good guy. Eric and Jeff and Kurt are all master techs. You couldn't do better than that. So they know what they're doing. They're honest. They're dependable. They're full of integrity, and they're just a good shop. I-10 and Bell Road, northeast corner, Kurtz Auto Repair. 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in a minute.
All about that theme and all the movie.
2 minutes after 33, so it's 33 minutes and 6 seconds right after the hour. My name's Mark Salem, and we got a full bank of boards, and so I'm going to skip the commercials, and I'm going straight to the bank of boards. And, Bill, you're up first.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate your show. Just took my wife's Honda. It's a 2004 Accord with a 3-liter V6 for an oil change. It's got 105,000 miles. Now they're telling me they want to do a $900 job. They say adjust valves, replace valve cover gaskets, 6 spark plugs. They say because of the mileage, that's what they want to do.
Okay.
What they're saying.
This is what I tell my customers, and it's going to be, okay, I'll just tell you. I don't believe that we should adjust the valves in the absence of a symptom. It is very lucrative. We make a lot of money. But let's look at the basics. If the lifters and the rockers are loose, there's going to be a clatter. Probably predominantly in the morning. Might go away, you know, an hour into driving after you warm it up. If they're too tight, there's going to be a backfire on the exhaust or in the intake. So we wrap the spark plugs into that kind of a job. But really, we don't need to take the valve covers off to get to the spark plugs. And depending on what V6 it is, we probably don't need to take anything other than a cover off the spark plugs. I agree with the spark plugs. I don't agree with the valves. If it were my car, I wouldn't do the valves. If it was my wife's car and I was in your shoes, I wouldn't do the valves. That's all there is to it.
It runs perfectly. I mean, it's very smooth. It doesn't make any noise. That 3-liter V6 from Honda is a wonderful engine, and I don't like to fix something that doesn't appear to be broke. Now, I understand getting regular oil changes and all that, but why would I do that when it's running so well?
Well, and then what about the timing belt?
I had that done about a year ago.
Fair enough. And that's the one I'm
that was like $1,100, too,
yeah.
When I had it done.
But they probably did a flush, and they may have done belts and hoses, and certainly they probably did a water pump and some tensioners. And so the $1,100 isn't outside of my range. So I'm okay with that. But if you don't have any symptoms, there. And then the next question is Mark, how many times have you seen a Honda motor or any other motor fail because the valves were not adjusted? And the answer is never. I've seen them fail, but they ignored the clatter or they ignored the backfire. I've seen them fail for that reason. But we knew that because the valves burn up, or we know that because the rocker assemblies just crushed. So the answer is, you know, you can do what you want, but I'd pass and just have the spark plugs done.
Okay, why do the spark plugs when it's running so well?
Well, 100,000 miles. You've been around the world four times, and the spark plugs are going to be used up. And I think even though it runs fine, and you can do that if you want. You can just say it runs fine. But I think when you take the spark plugs out and you ask for the old ones back, which you should, I think you'll be able to see that the electrodes are messed up pretty bad. The gap is probably a lot bigger than it ought to be, and it's not worth taking them out and regapping them and putting them back in. So if they want to do spark plugs, and look in your manual, but I'm pretty sure at 100,000 miles you're due for plugs.
Okay, I'd rather not take it back to the dealer because they're going to try to sell me all the rest of the stuff. Who would be good to do that in North Central Phoenix around 16th Street and Camelback?
Oh, you got a couple good guys there, but a 25th Street Auto, 25th Street and Indian School, 16th Street and Osborne, both of those shops. There's Martin's Auto at 16th Street and Osborne. You got Billy at 25th Street and Indian School. And neither one of them will pull your pants down, if I can use a term that I'm probably going to get in trouble for. Okay?
All right, appreciate your help.
You betcha. Michael, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. I have a question regarding, actually, it's not just our vehicle, Cherokee Jeep, but perhaps many vehicles of newer brands. And no doubt many callers have noticed a 1 to 2 second lag when you push the throttle of newer vehicles before they sometimes respond. Now, in a potentially drastic condition on the road that requires a quick response to avoid an accident, maybe a back-end collision, something that requires you to respond or at least want the car to respond and accelerate immediately, that lag in time may represent the difference of being in an accident or not being in an accident. Are manufacturers aware of this danger, and is there anything that can be done to adjust this issue?
I'm not aware of it at all. I mean, no one's ever said that to me, and no one's ever complained about that to me, and we work on thousands and thousands of car a year. So I'm unfamiliar. I don't know if you're experiencing that or if you got on the internet and found that out, but I'm not familiar with that. I've never had anybody bring that into my shop and say, fix it. The electronics on your car, when you blink your eye, they've already done 100 looks and sees and adjusts. So there's no reason for us to have any kind of lag unless the throttle position sensor is bad. And if that's the case, we have a check engine light. The idle air control motor is bad. We would have a check engine light. The throttle blades are dirty. We'd have a performance problem. So everything that's in that square box has a symptom. In the absence of a symptom or a check engine light, I'm not on the side of what you said.
And it may be something unique with our vehicle then.
And it could be. You could need some throttle blades cleaned up. You could need an idle air control motor cleaned up or replaced. You could have a TPS that's not synchronized to the throttle blades. There's a lot of things that can cause a delay. Usually it doesn't come in for the delay. It comes in for a code for a check engine light. And then that leads to, didn't you have a delay? Oh, my wife hasn't said anything, or my husband hasn't said anything. So that's kind of what you're up against. But anyway,
okay.
You're on your own, okay?
Okay, well, hey, thanks so much.
You betcha. Hesitation, and I'll put that under Michael. And Bob, I can't get to you. And Don and John, I can't get to you, but if you'll stay there, I promise to get to you just as soon as we get done with this break. I'm taking it a little early so that I have a whole lot of time on the backside. We got two lines open if you want to follow Bob, Don, and John, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm doing what I promised. We're going straight back to the phones. And Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2001 Dodge pickup with 115,000 miles on it, and I have a couple questions about the truck.
Okay.
When I first start the truck in the morning from stone cold, you know, after sitting all night, the engine seems to stumble a little bit where it almost acts like it's going to stall, but it doesn't. And then after that, it seems to run fine.
Okay.
I'd
be cleaning up the throttle blades. It's a fuel-injected motor, yes?
Yes.
Okay. I just have somebody clean up the throttle blades. I think I have about a 70% chance that that will fix it. We need air to flow about a metered amount of air to flow around the throttle blades, and they get carboned up so that air's gone. So it stumbles in the morning cold, and it's not anything to be concerned about because you don't have any other symptoms. There could be some bad things with a stumble in the morning. You haven't said nothing. So I think clean up the throttle blades, and I think I have a real good chance of fixing it with that. Okay?
Okay. Another question about it. I've also noticed I have what I think is a transmission issue, but I'm not positive. Here's what happens. The engine will rev up, you know, from a dead stop till it gets to about first gear where it wants to shift. And all of a sudden it feels like a slip, and I watch the tack, and the tack will shoot from 1,800 to 2,200 just instantaneously, and then back down, and then it seems to shift. After that, all the rest of the shifts are normal. And if I shift it manually, so if I shift it all the way into low and manually shift it from first to second to third, I don't get that.
Okay. I'm not quite sure it was designed to go heavy throttle from first gear, you know, on a regular basis. I'm not quite, has the pan been pulled off of this in a long time? Has the transmission been serviced?
Yeah, the transmission was serviced by actually Thompson's last year.
Okay. Well, I take it over there and show him and demonstrate that. What I think the most important thing you said was, is on hard throttle, it'll slide into second, but if I manually shift it, it doesn't. Another thing you could do is call ANS Transmissions, and ANS, Automatic and Standards, as for Alger, don't call on a Monday morning or Friday afternoon, and just say to him, I got an 01 Dodge pickup, got 115,000 miles on throttle up, kind of hard throttle up. It's got a sloppy 1-2 shift, but if I manually shift it, it's fine. Any ideas? And he'll guess. Now, he's a wholesale shop, but he'll take calls that I refer to him. So I would run this by Alger and see what happens.
Okay. One more quick question if we have a second.
Go.
So I recently had my truck serviced, and as part of the service, they did an oil change. And I picked up the truck after the shop closed, so they never asked me this, but they replaced my oil with synthetic oil. And this is the first time, to my knowledge, that it's ever had synthetic oil in it.
Okay.
Is that a problem, and am I committed to synthetic from here on out?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This whole idea that we're going to be embraced to mobile oil or no. The answer is no. The fact of the matter is when you get a synthetic oil, it's backward compatible to the 32 Chevys or Fords or whatever. So how much was your oil change, by the way? Should have been $80 to $100.
Yeah, it may have been. I don't have it here.
Okay. Her normal oil change is down to the $40 range, and then you got a blended oil and the synthetic. Let me just quickly go over the synthetic for you, okay? First of all, the synthetic oil is not going to hurt your motor, and it's not going to use any more synthetic than it does anything else. Second of all, synthetic has an extended oil change interval, so don't change it at 3. Don't change it at 5. I'd go 7,500 to 10,000 miles. I don't know how many do you drive a year, but for most of us, that's 1 year. So you don't change it because you're going to pay for this expensive oil and a really good oil, but then you're going to change it at 3,000 miles just when it's got its legs. So hopefully they didn't put your door sticker at 3,000 miles or their window sticker. Then they turned around and sold you synthetic oil. Those two don't work together. Okay? I'll talk about oil in a minute, but I got to get to Don. Don, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, buddy, I got Tom's phone number if you want it.
I've got his phone number. I got his phone number. He's talking about Tom Blackwell. Anyway, what's up?
No, that was it. That's all. I had to dig down in my compartment to get it. I thought, oh, he doesn't have it on hand?
Oh, no, I've got it. Tom is a friend of mine, and he called me the other day, and he said, you referred the guy to me, and I fixed his car, and he's really happy. And I said, God bless you. I got to go. Goodies call me the other day, and he said he had a car that was towed in piece apart, and I wouldn't have taken the job. And he said, I took it. It was an old Mercedes-Benz. I took it. I fixed him. I made him happy. Woo! I like those kinds of stories, but I got to run, Don. Thank you very much, buddy. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, I want to talk about head gaskets.
Okay.
From about 3 weeks ago, that there was a gentleman that called up, and he said that they took his engine all apart because he had a head gasket problem. And it sounded to like you started to say, well, I could have fixed your problem for $150 or something. That's what it sounded to be like you started to say. But I have a Chevy Astro van, and from time to time at the rear of the engine, I notice a little coolant leak on the driveway. And I've been underneath the van and try to find it, and I haven't been able to locate it yet.
Okay.
So I was just wondering if there's anything, a preventive thing you can do for head gaskets or anything of that nature.
You've jumped way too far ahead. There's nothing to suggest. Sure. If it had a head gasket problem, it would leak externally a lot, and it would leak internally that would cause the engine to run rough when you started it after it sat. You don't have either one of those. That's really easy. First of all, he said he had a head gasket blown, and I told him there's a sealer that we use, and he spent a whole lot of money, and I said, it's guaranteed, so if it doesn't work, I'll give you your $150 back. But I haven't given anybody their $150 back. Number two on yours, this is easy. You take it to a shop, they do a pressure test of the cooling system. So they look at the cap, it's got 15 pounds of pressure. They put 16 in your cooling system. They take the radiator cap off, they hook on this pump, pump it up to 16 pounds, let it sit there. Come back 5 minutes later, they're going to be a drop in the ground. Follow the drop up, we'll figure it out. Could be a heater hose, could be a heater core, could be the back of the intake manifold. It's probably not going to be a head gasket because you'd have a whole lot more than a couple of drops. So this is going to be a coolant leak at something at the back of the motor. It's no big deal. It probably is no big deal. And it could very well be hoses or something like that, a bad clamp. So you don't have the symptoms of a head gasket, and you certainly would have more than a couple of drops. And the head gasket, if that was external leak, and if it's an internal leak, you would have had a drivability problem on a warm or cold startup. So you don't have that. Do you have a garage? Okay. All right. Take it, make an appointment, and say to them, I have a small coolant leak. How much will you charge me to lift it up on the rack and pressure test it and then estimate the work? That's what you would say. And if you were a customer of most anybody else and you had a track record with them, most of us will throw it on the rack and pressure test it because in reality, the time to throw it on the rack is a whole lot more than pumping it up and walking away and coming back. So thank you, John. Thank you very much. When we come to auto repair shops, Action Auto's up at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. I've known Tom since 1983. I can assure you he's a good guy. He knows what he's doing. He's not in it to take advantage of you. He's not in it to every time you come in to sell you everything in the world, including a gas tank flush and a polishing of your rearview mirror. None of that happens. He's really good at what he does. He has excellent customer service, a fast turnaround time. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians, so he has everything you need. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair would be a good place to start. Now, okay, who we got, Gil?
We have Rich.
Rich, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I hope you can help me.
Sure.
Say, I've got a 2003 Dodge Dakota. It's only got like 84,000 miles on it, but that's not my problem. My problem is the fan blower motor for your AC, your heat, and all that. Okay?
Okay.
Years ago, I had a resistor burnout on it. Easy enough to repair. Replaced it. Okay.
Okay, stop.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
we don't need to go through that. First of all, the resistor only handles 1, 2, and 3 speeds, and it doesn't handle 4, and you said it's completely gone, so I'm not even going to go on the resistor. Just
right.
Did it lose all of its speeds?
Yes.
Okay. If it lost all of its speed, do you know where the blower motor's at?
I replaced the blower motor. It worked for a day, and then it stopped again.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you. I wish I could tell you something, but... either it wasn't the blower motor, and it's the switch. So even if you replace the blower motor, if the switch is going to be intermittent, the new one will be the same as the old one. you might take the fan switch, put it on normal, and take the fan switch and just play with it every once in a while. Slide it to the left, slide it to the right, raise it up, raise it down, and see if you can get that blower motor to become intermittent. I check the connection at the blower motor and make sure that the connection's good and tight, put a little dielectric grease on it. But I would play with the fan speed. So if you can get it to happen, then I would change the fan speed and see if it happens. So I'd go to 1, it doesn't happen. I'd go to 2, it doesn't happen. I'd go to 3, it doesn't happen. 4, that's the highest blower speed, and that's the highest amp draw. And so if I put it on low, it doesn't shut off very often. But if I put it on high, then that's when I get the problem. Well, then it's entirely possible that we've got a problem. Now, your 84,000 miles doesn't bother me, but in reality, your car is what, 16 years old? So if it's been outside and stored, we have humidity, we have moisture, we have all that kind of stuff. Last but not least, I want you to use the fist hammer trick. So the next time it goes out, I want you to...
Oh, believe me, I've used the fist hammer trick with cutting.
Okay, and I want you to do the dashboard. Not enough to break the vinyl, but over the center of your climate controls. So just give it the fist bump. You got to get it in its bad mood and give it the fist bump, but you need to check the speeds first. And so the blower motor resistor, there's going to be only three things. The blower motor resistor, which only handles 3 of the 4 speeds. Number 2, the switch itself. And number 3, the fan motor. So you've kind of eliminated the fan motor. But if you know where it's at, another thing is to take a piece of wood or a small hammer, and when it quits, tap it on the back. And if all of a sudden it fires up, then the brushes are coming off the back of the armature, and maybe you have a bad fan. So if every time the fan quits, you take a hammer and tap the back side of the fan, the motor side, and it comes back on, I might take it off and take it down and tell them what you found and ask them if they'll give you a warranty that for a replacement. So good luck to you, Rich. Good luck to you. And I've got another hour, so if you want to join us, you can. We're going to talk about oil real quick. The concern is that once you use synthetic, you have to use synthetic for the rest of your life. That's not true. We have 3 kinds of oils. We have conventional. That's what our mothers and fathers and our grandfathers used. Conventional has a 3,000-mile oil change, and the protection it gives you is kind of a narrow range. I'll give you an example. Conventional oil will burn up at about 280. That means it goes from a liquid to a solid. It's just like cooking a thing of butter. There, sooner or later, you're going to burn it. It'll flow out of the can at 15 below zero, but that's all. So we got 15 on the low, 280 on the high. A blended oil takes that low and moves it to 40.
2 minutes.
And on the high, it moves it to 300. Frankly, your motor's toast long before 300. So having a protection up to 300 degrees is kind of stupid. Synthetic oil goes to 60 below zero. It'll pour out of the can at 60 below zero. It'll protect your engine to 500 degrees. And like I said, your motor's toast after 300 degrees. So your gauge in the middle is about 210. 260 is going to be, you know, where you're in the red zone. And sustained driving above that for probably 10, 15 minutes is going to take the motor down to its knees. So there's 2 things that are different. Number 1, the price of oil changes is different. Number 2, the interval is different. And number 3, the protection is different. So those 3 things are the difference between conventional, a blended oil, and they won't tell you if it's 10% conventional or if it's and 90% synthetic or the other way around. You could have 10% synthetic and 90% conventional, and we're going to call it a blended oil. Or it's called a semi-synthetic, and there's a bunch of other words. But there's a difference in price, too. You can get a conventional oil change for, I don't know, $40. I'm going to use round figures here. A blended one's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of 55 or 60, and a full synthetic's going to be between 80 and 100, depending on how many quarts you have. However, my customers, if I've got them in the, 10,000, 12,000-mile range, I bring them in every April for an oil change. And they can go. The oil will go the whole year. Their car should go the whole year. But they only have to pay for 1 oil change a year. And that's good for them. And I use lots of people from Ahwatukee Mountain Park Ranch. They do that because they trust my judgment. So synthetic is backward compatible. You don't need to worry about your car loving synthetic because it doesn't know the difference between peanut butter and synthetic oil. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we have four lines of the five available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automotive Dynamics, which is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete auto services. Chuck Nide opened this up in 1982. His son, Derek, now runs the store. So it's a two generation. He's been around a very long time, and usually you don't hang around a long time. If you're bad, you rip people off or you're mean to them. At Automotive Dynamics, their staff and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percent of your repair bill. Therefore, they are insured. Management is insured. They won't sell unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're in the Sun City area, I would like to recommend to you that you visit Automotive Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Good morning, Mike. What's on your mind?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
How are you, Mark?
Thank you.
I've got a kind of unusual situation. 2006 Highlander.
Okay.
V6. About a week ago, I had it go dead on me with a battery change coming that evening by AAA, very late. And it's now been a week later, and I had the same occurrence occur to me where it went dead in the middle of the night. Only it put on about probably 50, 60 miles since the last battery change. I did notice after the battery change that I was picking up kind of a high-level whine. Is it possible that the fellow who put it in was kind of new and he may have put it in so that the ground was incorrect? Would that be his problem?
No, not at all.
Okay.
But I think you should call AAA back and you should say, I got the same problem I had. And I need you to tell me where to go and have somebody check it out appropriately because I paid $70, $80, $90, $100 for a new battery, and clearly a new battery didn't fix it.
You've just
wound up my underwear something fierce. I hate that kind of call, and it's not because of you. It's because why would you expect some kid, three-whiskered kid, or anybody to get out of their tow truck and be able to thoroughly check your electrical system? And then why do they sell so many batteries? There's not a shop. Well, let me change that. I've had more than 10 shops over the last year, 12 months, and we've sat drinking beers together or having breakfast together, and this subject will come up, and every single one of them will say, that car's come back to me twice. Or they took my battery out, and I said, I want my old battery back because I can warranty you. It's not the battery. It's easy to test. Oh, your alternator belt looks like a shoestring. Or the battery cables are dirty. There's so many other things. So let me change your question. When a car doesn't start, how many different possibilities is there? Well, batteries one.
Wow.
Yeah, battery, starter, alternator, neutral safety switch, brake switch, ignition switch. And I don't have to go on. So I think you need to hit this tennis ball back in their court. Be polite. Be nice. They have some shops around town, so they can take your car in and check it out. But your guy sold me a battery. He insisted the battery would fix my problem now 5 days later. And if they say, well, obviously you have a draw, and you say, well, why didn't he find that when he tested my system?
Right.
I'm sorry that you're having this problem, but I think if you keep your cool, and I think if you're adamant and you're on the right side of the argument, then I wouldn't settle for anything less than my refund on my battery. Especially if you take it somewhere else and they say the alternator belt's loose, the battery cables are dirty, the alternator's not putting out, there's a variety of things. And they say, this is what's wrong. Then you say, wait a minute. I have the same symptoms after AAA put the battery in. And so you fixed it. And then you go, I'm going to drive this for 2 weeks just to make sure so I don't make a jerk out of myself. So 2 weeks later, everything's fine. Call them up and say, foul. And see what they say.
Two more quick ones. All right. I used to bring my car to Nadine's over in Scottsdale. I know that's changed ownership.
Yes.
Last time I was in there, I felt like it was not quite getting the same service. I was looking from Nadine's. Do you have somebody else you might suggest?
Yeah, the guy in North Scottsdale I'd send you to is Blackwell at 40th and Greenway. I want to tell you and everybody else, when there's a change of ownership in a shop, and I'll give you another example, Thunderbird Auto. Tom Fletcher sold Thunderbird Auto. Even though the young man has all the signs of being somebody that would fit on my best car repair shop list, he still has to have years of experience in that location, and he has to show us these insurance policies, and he has to have good customer service, and he has to have good equipment. And in Nadine's case, it's my understanding, well, first of all, they've never asked to be a part of our list. And the second thing is that it's my understanding that it was bought at what somebody thought was a good price, and now it's for sale. So I think this is this could be easily, I'm guessing that this could be something where investors are involved. But I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that it was sold because Nadine and I were friends. First of all, Nadine and Stacy, her husband who's deceased, we go back to 1994 together. We built our shops together. We were the same young late 20-year-old kids that borrowed a lot of money to build our shops. So we grew up together. I love Stacy like a brother. But he died of leukemia, and as if Nadine called me and others, we would mentor her, we would help her, we would discuss things with her. Blackwell was a good friend of hers. I was a good friend of hers. Community Tire, Howard Fleshman from Community Tire was a good friend of hers. So all of us assisted her. But you need, if you're going to go up in that direction, I can only recommend Tom Blackwell at Blackwell Automotive.
Okay, that's good. Second one. You mentioned before in the past, good transmission shop, I believe, on Black Canyon and what?
Well, there's one up at Deer Valley in Black Canyon, but there's two other shops that I think you should stop at and let them look at your problem, because I think that in that area you could go to Kurtz at I-17 and Bell, or you could go to Action Auto at Deer Valley and I-17. I would call Action or Kurtz. Kurtz is with a C, and I would say to them, "Hey, I have this transmission problem. Here's my car. Can I bring it over and I can demonstrate the problem? I can tell you about the problem, and how much will you charge me to talk to me and take my car for a drive?" That's what you're going to say.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Thanks very much. One quick follow up. After I changed the battery, what I was picking up was a high speed whine. Almost like when you're low on fluid in the power steering system.
Uh-huh.
Does that make any sense?
Well, it would if you shifted it into neutral. If, let's say, it's whining at 60 miles an hour, throw it in neutral.
No, it's whining when you start it up.
Okay, but that's all.
Right away. Yes. Yeah, I'm almost consistent. It runs consistently with that, but whine.
Okay, so every time you start it up, it whines.
No, every time I run it at all. I mean, the turn on, I start to drive, it's whining all the time.
Okay. I can think of a lot of other things to make it whine, but the real question is the whine related to speed or RPM? So if you put it in low gear, does the whine increase as you go faster? And if that's the case, then the next question is if you throw it in neutral at a higher speed, does this and we go back to idle, is the whine there then? It could easily be a fluid problem, and Action and Kurtz can direct, they can check that out for you. So, and then the whine really, you know, gosh, there's so many things that can whine. Wheel bearings can whine, alternators can whine, a bad belt can whine, an air conditioning compressor can whine. So we just kind of need to figure out where the noise is coming from before we start rebuilding your transmission. And whoever does the transmission, you say to them, "You've heard the whine. It has to be gone when I pick it up. And it has to work as well as it did. Because it worked fine, but now all I got's a whine. So you fix the whine, I'm a happy camper. But if I spend money and I got the whine, I'm not going to be happy. And I'm going to pay you
I'm going to start with AAA today and have them come back out again and see what we got. But,
okay.
I just went dead on me last night.
Okay.
Again.
Yeah, I've said my piece about that. But anyway, good luck to you, Mike. Good luck to you. Oh, boy. I want you to hold me to the same standard that I tell you to hold everybody else. When they you have a problem and you give them the symptoms, and when they call you with the repair, the diagnosis, the repair, the estimate, you need to say to them, if we're guessing, if this turns out to be a guess, whose money are we guessing with, yours or mine? So if I have a whine and you tell me it's an alternator and it's $300 to replace the alternator, tax in, out the door price, and I get it and I have the whine the next morning and every day after that, and it's all day long, then I need to know whose money we just guessed with. Was that your money or my money? Now, it's totally unacceptable for us to guess with your money unless we tell you we're guessing with your money. There's a lot of times... it's a situation where it's an intermittent problem, you know. It's hard to decide that, and so we may say to you, you know, your belts are kind of noisy, and that can give you the noise you're talking about. I'm going to put a little bit of belt dressing on there, but I'm telling you, you have a lot of miles, and those are the original belt, and the belt dressing is not something that will permanently stay on your belt, and we'll need to change your belts afterwards, but it's a diagnostic process. I can't get it to happen, but you can. And if I put some belt dressing on it, which I would have not otherwise done, then it'll change the symptoms. And so if you come back and say, oh, changed, then we're going to put belts on it. But we don't want you to leave with the belt dressing on because that didn't do it. So that's just a diagnostic process. So that was kind of a terrible example. But there are other times. Sometimes we'll put a battery in a car of a customer who's been a customer for years. Try this. Especially on an intermittent no start. The question is no start mean it cranks over but doesn't catch? It cranks over but the engine doesn't start? Or does a no start mean I hit the key and nothing happens? Or I hit the key and I hear a click? So people use my car won't start, but in reality there's four or five different activities and they're all different. So if you can say, I crank my car over, it sounds normal, but it won't catch, it won't start. Bingo, you just saved yourself $50 in diagnostic fee. You say, I go to start my car, and all it does is click. It's a heavy click, click, click. Bingo, starter or solenoid. I hit the key, and nothing happens. Battery connections or battery. But I'll come back an hour later, and it'll start right back up. Battery connections. Bad ground, bad power lead. Bingo. It's that easy for technicians, seasoned technicians, to come to those conclusions. But what comes out of your mouth will guide them appropriately. So don't let your husband tell you what to say. Just give us the symptoms as best as you know them. We'll be back in a minute. Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour. No, it isn't. It's 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, but it's 48 seconds. I just looked at the clock wrong. I want to tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that I'm willing to tell you to go to. It's not the best shop, or no, he's not the only shop in Mesa, but he's the only one that applied and made the grade. Others have applied but didn't make the grade. So they've been around a long time, since 1970. Brian and Thelma own and operate it, and both of them come from a gas station service repair facility background. Both of their parents were involved in that. So if you're in Mesa, they have ASC-certified technicians. They're really good people. You only have to meet Brian or Thelma to understand why I think they're a great couple and they run a great business. So they're on Main Street, just east of Stapley Drive on the south side of the road. Main and Stapley, east side of the road on the south side. And, Rich, you have another question?
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi.
Just curious as to if you have any recommendations of a good shop in the Surprise area?
I would call S&S Tire, and if you're talking about that blower motor thing, I would call them and ask them if they want to take a shot on an intermittent blower motor.
I'm kind of looking just for an overall good shop. I've been here for 3 years, and the mechanics I had really kind of, I think they've changed. I don't think they've changed ownership, but they've definitely changed
philosophies,
attitude, and techniques.
Okay, and that happens. I think S&S Well, first of all, I think a lot of S&S Tire, but I think they're smart enough, and I think they will tell you when they're not the best shop, and they'll refer you to somebody else, just like I do. So cool. I think you can count on them to take care of you and do what's best for you. But you can remind them, if you're not the best shop for this, for a problem I have, please refer me to one that you would take your car to. And that's a great question. Thank you, Rich. Thank you very much. Tom, you're up next.
Hey, thank you. On an 02 Windstar, my ABS orange light comes on, the brake light and the traction control lights come on together intermittently. If I shut the engine off and restart it, runs for a while without that. Is that a general computer problem? Or
No, not at all. If you lose all those lights, there's I'd say a 90% chance you lost a wheel sensor. So we're going to monitor the spin on all four tires, and they all have to be the same. But if you just put one tire, a new tire on there, that can throw the speed off because the speed sensors are going to report that that has a larger circumference than the other worn tires.
Okay.
But here's what we do. We plug in a scanner and we go drive it. Usually send two techs. One drives and one watches the scanner. He's got all four wheel sensors. He's watching them. So the guy goes behind bashes and does hard right turns in a circle. Now, we're moving all the tires in a different radius, and so that's where they're going to fail. Now, if you go in and say, every time I make a 90-degree right turn, I get the light, and then after a couple days, it goes out until I make another 90-degree right turn. We don't get that very often, but that's really the situation. So we're going to look at it with a scanner. We're going to figure out that. But what you can do if you want, do you know where the sensors are at in the backside of the wheel area?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes.
Take it down to the local car wash.
Clean them off?
Yeah. Wash them off. Yeah. Wash them off. Just crawl underneath there or turn the wheels all the way to the right and do the inner one on the right front and then turn them to the left and do the inner one on the left front and crawl underneath there and just blow them. You can't hurt them. So if you blow them off and they have what we call fuzz all over them because they're magnetic, and if it works, you're home free. And then you can save, you can hand a dollar the next time the plate passes you, and to ensure my acceptance.
Another question, if I may.
Okay.
My vent doors are changing, you know, when I accelerate from vacuum. I took it into a shop, and they smoke tested it. They spent like an hour on it, and they even pressurized some switch or something, and they just couldn't get it to show anything.
Okay.
They didn't charge me, but...
yeah, they didn't do anything.
They spent a lot. Actually, I gave them $50.
Okay, all right. That was your choice. Okay.
Yes.
Do you know where the hose goes from the firewall to the engine to service the air conditioning controls in the dashboard?
No.
Okay. Well, that's broken, or there's a problem there, or that port at the engine is filled with carbon, and so we're no longer getting vacuum or an insufficient supply of vacuum. But I can tell you this much, only us gray-haired guys know how to fix that. And it's a real simple exchange, especially we've been there and done that. The other day.
I haven't done that one.
The other day, some guy showed up at my house to fix my microwave. And, you know, we were talking, what do you do for a living? And sometimes I tell him the truth. Sometimes I don't want to talk cars for the rest of my life. But this guy said, I work on cars. Oh, I got a Dodge pickup outside. And blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, God, I can fix that in about 2 seconds. So I went and got a piece of windshield wiper hose out of the barn. I walk over, lift the hood, find the plastic line that's broken, cut a piece an inch long, slide it on one, slide it on the other, check it out. It's fixed. And he goes, well, I'll trade you for the microwave work. And I said, that's crazy. I'll pay you for the microwave work. But that's all it took me to fix his dash vent problem. So I'm not saying that everybody's going to hit the nail on the head. I'm just saying I think it's in the vacuum supply area. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, actually, I did find that back there on the behind the passenger side firewall there, and they pulled out a connector there and stuff. But why wouldn't it show up with a smoke test?
And the answer is we don't use a smoke test for that. That's not what we're looking for. We want to check the vacuum, and we want 17, 18 inches of vacuum to that circuit every minute of every day when that motor's running. Mm-hmm. When you throttle down to the floor, we'll lose a little vacuum, but there's an accumulator in that system that will kind of hold that. So if you have intermittently coming and going, then that means the vacuum is intermittently. The fact that it's coming and going and it's making it work means that we're connected, but our supply is substandard. And every time it gets substandard, it switches to defrost, and every time it comes back, it blows it at your face. So I got to run.
So pressurize it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. You betcha. You bet. AC vents 10-7. All right. Andy, you're up next.
Yeah. Hey, Mark. Thanks again for doing this every weekend.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. I have a 2011 Ford Edge. It's been overheating recently. Take it to the mechanic. Mechanic tells me my fan, the cooling fan, is not working, so I need to replace that. Well, I go to pick it up because I figure I can do that myself, and the battery is drained, and so that told me I better call you and see if maybe there's something more going on than just the fan.
No, let me ask you a question first. It's overheating when? City driving, highway driving, and where is the needle exactly? Is it half? Is it three-quarter? Is it flirting with the red, or is it in the red?
It'll get all the way up if I let it.
All the way up to where?
To red.
Okay,
If I let it. It hasn't got there yet, and it's only when it's under a load.
Okay.
I was able to drive it to the mechanic in the morning shortly after rush hour, and it did not.
Okay.
It stayed dead center the whole way.
Okay. Here's why I'm asking you these questions. I just kind of need answers. If your fan's not working, there'll be no harm, no foul at 60, 70, 80 miles an hour. We're running air across the grill so hard and so fast, we don't care if there's a fan on there. But if you say to me, Mark, when I'm driving around the town and I'm at slow speeds under 45 miles an hour, and I'm ticking up over the three-quarter mark, then I agree it's a fan. Now, what you do is you turn on your air conditioner, you open up the hood, you let it run until the upper hose is just red hot. I mean hot to your hand. You can't handshake it for more than 3 seconds because it's that hot. The fan should come on. Then you turn on your air conditioning and see if the fan will come on for then. And you might have the same fan running both of them. So if it's the fan comes on when you turn on your air conditioning unit, then it ain't the fan. So,
okay.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
And the dead battery is just a different symptom?
It's going to be something different. The dead battery, after 9 volts, the fan won't run anyway. So if it dropped to 9 volts, but you didn't drive it when it was get 9 volts. I got to run them up against a break. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Be back in a minute. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark Salem here at your service. Let me just take care of some business and get to the callers. Tom Blackwell owns Blackwell Automotive. We've been friends for a long time. He calls me the other day and he says to me, have you quit beating your wife? Okay, and then I said to him, I'm going to start using some of the most foul words that my wife taught me. And he starts yelling, ho, ho, ho. And I said, okay, someone's in your office. And he goes, yes. He says, you sent me Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, and they're in here, and I fix their cars. And I know that you don't think I can fix cars, but I have them here to tell you I fixed their cars. That's the kind of relationship we have. I'm telling you, when you go to Blackwell, which is North Scottsdale, North and Northeast Scottsdale, he's going to take good care of you. I know him really, really well. And if he says to call me, just walk out of the room because you don't want to hear what I have to say if he lies to me and tells me nobody's in his office. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Ben, you're up first. How can I help you?
I have. Good morning, by the way.
Thank you.
So my girlfriend drives a 2006 GMC Yukon, and last night she was sitting in the parking lot of the gym, and she says it just started to roll backwards, and so she hit the brakes, nothing happened, hit the emergency brake, and it's stuck in drive. And I pulled a scan off of it. It says U1000 and U1016. They say ECU, basically it's the tranny not communicating with the motor.
Okay. Okay, well.
And I was wondering if there was a simple fix or if it was maybe like a bad computer problem, what my next step was, I guess.
Do what everybody else does. Go get an ECM and then figure out after you buy a new ECM that it has to be programmed. And then bring it over to me and I'll program it for $150. And then after you're $300 deep in this mess, then and you find out you're not even close to it, then you hire a shop and he fixes a bad connection for another $100 and now everything's fixed. Woohoo! So there's
so ill.
There's no other way. It has to be diagnosed, and under the best of conditions, it'll cost you X amount of dollars, and they'll fix it for 30 cents under the best of conditions. But it could be the PCM, but we're going to check the PCM by doing this. We're going to give it a signal, create a signal, and we want to see the result. So we just we do something and we make and see if it sees it. And then we also tell it something and see if it does it. So we're looking at the in and the out of the PCM or the ECM, whatever you want to call it. But I just want to, I've given you a good example of what happens in our shop. $300-$400 deep into it. And the worst part is they buy a used one and then we install it and we find out that the used one is for a Pontiac and we've just bought one for a Yukon. Or they bought one for a Yukon. So, you know, and that's it. That's all I got to tell you, man. If you want to be her hero, take it to somebody who you can look in the eye and say, are you capable of diagnosing this? And what's your diagnostic charge? And I'll tell you, most everybody's 75 to 150, somewhere around in there. All righty. Got to run, Ben, but thank you very much. And I'm glad I made you laugh. Kenna, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning. So I have a 2011 Nissan Pathfinder, and I have a typical squeaky brake, grindy brake issue. And I took it in, and they replaced my brake pads, and everything was fine. About a month later, it started grinding and squeaking again, so I took it back. They warrantied everything out and replaced my rotors. About a month after that, it started squeaking and grinding again. I took it back, and I said, I don't want this thing back until you fix that squeaky, grindy thing permanently. So they took apart my brake system or whatever they did, and they said, your bearings are all bad. So $800 later, completely replaced all my bearings. They warrantied out the brake pads and rotors again, just in case. It's a month later, and now my brakes are grinding again.
Oh,
and
boy.
I can feel it in the brake pads. So
I don't even want to know.
What do I do?
Okay, well, first of all, I want you to mail the name of the shop to me, mark@marksalem.com, because I have it in my head who it is, but I'm not going to use that word today. Okay, first of all, if the bearings were bad, there would have been a tremendous brake pulsation from the very get-go because the bearings are going to allow the rotor to wobble, and that's going to make your foot go up and down, up and down, up and down. Plus, you'd have a noise associated with bad bearings, and it would occur when you turn right. Yeah, 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 yeah. And you turn left. Yeah, 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 yeah. They're just guessing. I would have put a hardware kit on there. I would have checked the calipers. And see, when you take the old pads off, there you have to know. There's two pads. There's an inner and an outer. If the inner is worn a bunch more than the outer, you got to do something. And if the outer is worn dramatically worse than the inner, you better know what you're doing. You have to read the pads, and you look at the pads, and they'll tell you everything. But unless you got somebody seasoned, and I'm talking about, you know, somebody who's done this before and been bit by that before, and you have no choice. Hopefully you can stop payment on that $800 with your credit card.
It's already done, and it was a month ago.
Okay. Well, you can still call them and ask them. That's an option. But what you're going to have to do now, you can't go back. Well, you can if you want to. I'd go have it fixed, and then I'd go to them. Let me just ask you a question. Is this a chain or an independent shop or a dealer?
It's a chain.
Okay.
A chain.
So you can raise hell with the chain, and they have good customer service people some of the time, but you need to go get it fixed, and you need to drive it twice as long as you would normally do, and then you need to go on the nice but firm mode and get a hold of their customer service people.
What could it be, then, if it's not what they fixed? What is causing this?
Well, it's not what they fixed. We know that, but you didn't say anything about a hardware kit or calipers.
No.
And the hardware kit's $20. $20. And the hardware kit keeps the caliper to slide left and slide right, just like a knife with butter on toast. And if it hangs up, it causes all kinds of overheating problems, which is exactly what you're describing.
Okay.
So
yeah, because I can feel it in my brake pad when it doesn't pulse. But you can feel the grinding, like it's gripping and holding on and not letting go.
Okay, and that could easily be that we've accelerated the pad. But the grinding is a symptom. We got to fix the problem, and then if we do it right, we're going to fix the grinding. But I don't know the answer to it. We need a fresh pair of eyes on this, and you need to look at the new shop and say, I won't hold you to their other shop mess ups. I just want you to tell me, if you can find out what it is, and it's doing it right now, tell me what it is and give me an estimate to fix it. But I'm going to hold your feet to the fire in spite of the fact that I haven't yet tangled with shop number one. So okay. What part all of town right. do you live in?
North Phoenix.
North Phoenix, east or west of the 10 or the 17? East, Scottsdale?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I take it to Blackwell. Just tell him what you told me. Here's all the receipts. None of this is fixed to my car. How much are you going to charge me to diagnose it or give me a range, and you're going to call me with an estimate, and you're going to promise you fixed it. That's exactly what you say. And then say to him, and if you can't, then I'll take it all the way down to Salem's, and he'll just laugh. Okay?
Okay, all right. I'm going to hold you to that.
You can. I'll cut it out of the tape for you. I tape every show, so if anybody says you need to cut that, I'll cut it out. As a matter of fact, right now you're at 42 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I got to take a break. So thank you for laughing, Ken, and Bob, you stay right there. We'll be right back. Thirty seconds after 44 minutes. I keep looking at the wrong part of the clock. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to Bob like I promised. Bob, how can I help you?
Thank you. I have a 98 Chevy Silverado 350.
Okay.
And the service engine light comes on sometimes, and then it goes off by itself. I had one of the codes on it, which was diagnosed at PO420, a catalytic, or PO, yeah.
Okay.
420 catalytic inefficiency.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just come on. It seems like when it's hot outside and I come up to a stoplight,
okay,
and then an engine will kind of shake a little bit, and then it'll, that light will come on, and then the next day I start it up, the light's off.
Okay.
But the guy that looked at
okay.
it said the,
okay, hold on. None of that makes any difference. The inefficiency means that there's two sensors, and we need to see the front one saying A and the back one saying B. And so we're getting something wrong there. It's not likely to be the catalytic converter, which is about $1,000 for your truck. It's not likely to be that because the light goes off. But we can still go in and look at historical data, and it'll give us some information. Just because it says catalytic converter inefficiency, it doesn't mean the cat's bad. It typically means that sensors are lying. This is a real easy diagnosis. This is something that most guys would bid for $50 to $100. It would be easy. What needs to happen is someone needs to diagnose this. I'll give you a quick example. If we're running a bunch of fuel through the front of it, and the motor's using abnormal fuel, and it's sending raw gas into the catalytic converter, then the back one won't yell clean. It'll say contaminated because the catalytic converter's having a tough time processing all this raw gas coming into it. So the front side's bad, and it's even in front of that, it's in the motor. So the front sensor's screaming, woo, way too much, and the back sensor goes, I can't control it. That's it. We just go in and look at the sensors. We go drive it. And it's going to be something intermittent because the light goes off and the light comes on. And you also said it runs bad, and it could be a misfire. This could be a spark plug or a bad plug wire that's causing a rich condition that the catalytic converter is having a tough time handling. So it just needs to be diagnosed. And like I said, I'm going to guess $50 to $100, but somebody could want more. But this is going to be an easy one. And chances of it being a converter is slim and none because the light would come on and stay on if the converter was bad. Thank you very much for calling, Bob. Thank you. Wayne, you're up next.
Hello. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay. The question is about your comments on oil.
Okay.
I've got a 2005 Chrysler Town & Country 3.8-liter engine.
Okay.
And very familiar. It's like my 10th or 12th Chrysler van. Love that engine. It's just bulletproof, and I put 100% synthetic oil in it, and I keep having arguments with people about you're wasting your money, you shouldn't do that. Well, I drive 20,000 miles a year, so I change the oil twice a year, and I'm happy.
Okay.
Is there any reason I shouldn't do that?
No, you're doing fine. I think I'm gonna put my psychiatric hat on and tell you how to fix this. Stop telling people what you're telling them. Why get in an argument with people who have, you can see air through their ears? This is new technology. What you're doing is right. I'm an oil expert. I can testify in court about how oil is made and what it does and what it doesn't do. I'm just telling you, what you're doing is fine. I'm proud of you.
Okay.
I'm proud of you. Don't say that no more, because all these other hairy-chested guys that think they know everything about cars and engine oil are going to tell you you're crazy. Well, I'm telling you, you're doing fine. Okay? All righty. Thank you very much. Wayne. Good luck to you, buddy. Sin oil argument. Is it Barry? Or no, Terry. Terry. How can I help
you? It is.
Yes, sir.
It is. I've got my daughter called me last night. Phone call you haven't always hit yet. Anyway, her 2001 Mitsubishi Galant, the water, she said the floorboard is wet, not the top necessarily, but she lifts up the pad underneath the carpet is all wet.
Okay. Okay.
And I told her, well, it's got to be either a heater hose or an AC hose or something. I don't know.
Okay.
She's in California and I'm in Arizona. So.
Okay. All right. Well, the next thing she's going to ask you is will you pay the bill? You know that. You know that.
Yeah,
I know that, and you know that.
That's a foregone conclusion.
Okay. That's why she called Daddy and goes, Daddy.
Absolutely.
Hey, I've walked in your shoes. Okay, you're partially right. It's either going to be coolant from a heater core, and sometimes you loop the hoses, and the coolant leak goes away, and now you got to dig it out of the dash, or she goes without coolant in California. Second, it could be the drain in the evaporator case, and the air conditioning is sweating, the drain is plugged up, and instead of pushing the water out on the ground where the passenger's feet is, it's leaking. It's coming over. Now, there's a lot of us gray-haired guys that have an air gun with a fine, you know, small piece of tubing on it.
Yep.
We'll sometimes just tape up all the vents and just blow into it, and we'll hear a splash and a bunch of water come out. Or you got to go underneath and poke a coat hanger up in there. You don't want to blow up in there because you don't want the dirty water to go everywhere. So you'll just take a piece of welding rod in the drain. Okay. Water comes out and you're done. So she just needs to describe it and everything will be fine. Okay?
Sounds like a plan to me.
Okay. Thanks, well, good luck to you. I hope I saved you some money. I know what it's like to have kids out of state.
me too.
Yeah. Thanks. All righty. You know, when it comes to car repair, it's really as much your responsibility to tell us what you got as it is to ours to fix it. So it's really important that we both hold our positions. And what you don't want to do, and I'm speaking to the guys because the wives never do it or the women never do it, is don't tell us how to fix your car. At my shop, if you tell us how to fix your car, we're going to politely hand you a piece of paper and you're going to sign it, or we're not going to touch your car. And then when you sign it, it says, I will accept full responsibility for telling you what to do, and whether it fixes my problem or not, I'm not going to ask for a refund. And you have to sign that. So you're accepting full responsibility for your diagnosis. I'm telling you, that's a bad deal. And most guys will just leave and they'll be mad at me, and I'm okay with them being mad at me because they're hardly ever right. It's just a car's more sophisticated today than it ever was before. And you have to understand, first of all, let me tell you this. Everything in a computerized car talks in numbers, 1 to 5. And, of course, we divide it into 1 1/4, 1 1/2, 1 3/4, blah, blah, blah. 1 to 5. Now, let me explain. If 1 is sitting there without the wheel spinning and 5 is 100 miles an hour, the computer knows how fast you're going with a number. And this is in a simplistic way. So 1 means you're sitting there, and 5 means you're doing 100 miles an hour and everything in between. So if the computer loses the signal and thinks that you're sitting there, it's not going to shift your transmission into second gear. It doesn't see a speed sensor, and it's going, wow. So he's still sitting there. He or she's still sitting there. So it probably won't shift your transmission into second gear. Those are the kinds of things that we deal with. We have to go in and see what's going into the computer's head and what's coming out. And that's kind of important. I also want to tell you that a lot of people at this show and other times think that I have a problem with AAA. And I really don't. I want to tell you, I have a relationship that goes back to the 80s. I drove tow trucks for those guys. I drove for tows. I was a subcontractor with my own towing company in the 80s. And then in the mid-80s, And actually, this late 70s to early 80s, in the mid 80s, I was one of the very first AAA approved auto repair shops. I left after that because they gave us customer survey cards, and the customer survey cards were used to, in my opinion, to kind of beat us up. So if somebody gave us 4 stars instead of 5, we caught hell. The second thing is that they began to want, and they were going to use those cards, and we now know that they did use those cards as marketing tools. And then they opened up their own shops, and my customers were marketed to go to their shops. And as you can imagine, I didn't like that, and neither did a lot of other guys. Then they got so bold as they wanted a copy of your database, of your customer file. And this is about the same time they began to open AAA, auto repair shops throughout the valley. So I don't not like them. They have a lot of good people. They have a lot of, it's just the ideas that I don't like, and I don't think they're good players in the automotive industry. I don't know how they fix cars or not. I don't really care. I just don't like the mentality, the management mentality. And I don't like someone telling me that they're going to drive business to my shop and then turn around and ask for my customer database and then open up their own shops. That just kind of, I don't know, this old cowboy doesn't like that kind of stuff. Speaking of stuff that I like, automatic transmission exchange has been around since 1968. Phil's a good guy, and his staff and him know all about transmissions. He doesn't rebuild everything that comes in the door. He fixes a lot of those. He fixes the leaks. He fixes the shift pattern. He fixes the overheating problems. He fixes that. But if you need a rebuild, he'll tell you, and he'll bid it. And you can bet your bottom dollar it's going to be that. So he has the ability to return your transmissions to meet or exceed the OEM, original equipment manufacturer specification. So he's on 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. In another part of the world, at 38th Avenue and Indian School, that's Harker's Automotive. And not too long ago, a lady started talking about Sadie the Saturn. And she had this problem that nobody could fix. Nobody. Everybody in the world has looked at her car, and nobody could fix this. Now, I'm exaggerating, and you know I'm exaggerating. So I said, where do you live? And she told me, I said, take it over to Bob at Harker's Automotive. I get this wonderful email back to her from her. I took it in. I explained the problem. He fixed it. He called me and told me he fixed it. He was within his estimate. I've driven it, and it's perfect. That's the kind of guy Bob is. You wave the red flag in front of him, and he'll fix your car. He'll fix things that others, including me at times, I need a fresh pair of eyes. I want you to take it, Bob, at Harker's, or take it some another shop I'll guide you to geographically. So if you've got a car that's really a problem, and Bob, I mean, you're not going to walk in there and he's going to fix it for $80. Sometimes you have to track it down, and he'll keep you in the loop with respect to diagnosing it. Ellen runs the front counter. Bob runs the shop, and they're good. But they also do oil changes and tire rotations and cooling system flushes and all the other stuff. So one part of his business, which he tells me is like 10-15%, is fixing the car nobody else could. The rest of it is brake jobs and everything else. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, may I suggest that you do business with Larry Harker's Auto. They've been in business since 1967, and they're really good people. 38th Avenue and Indian School is where you'd find them. So at the end of the day, this show is all about you. It's about you and your problems, and I give you the very best advice I can give you, and some of you like it, and some of you don't, but I'm giving you the same advice I give my mother if she was in your shoes. Now, my sisters, I'd probably give you the wrong advice. No, I'm only partially teasing you. The idea is this isn't about my shop. That's why I don't ever mention my shop. It has to do with you, and my job is to send you to a place that's going to take care of you. So my list of best car repair shops is a list that I say this, and it's written on our website. It says, if one of the shops does something wrong, and the Better Business Bureau and somebody else, and I'll think of it in a minute, says that they need to make a refund or fix your car again, and the shop doesn't, I will fix your car or make a refund up to $5,000. And the $5,000 was meant to cover like transmissions and stuff. So you have my promise that if the shop takes advantage of you and somebody tells them, somebody that's in the dispute resolution,
tells them to give you your money back or to fix your car and they don't, I will. Now, of course, I'm going to kick them off the list, and I've already kicked a couple guys off. But the idea is I'm here to protect you, and I'm not here to make money on you. When you go there, I don't get any money. If you go there and spend thousands of dollars, I don't make a dime more. Those guys pay $100 a month to be on our list, $1,200 a year. And they're good, and they're honest, and they're dependable. And I can say to you without a doubt, they're good guys. I've been in this business since 1988 in the radio business, and I've been in the car repair business since 79. I know what I'm talking about. Mark at marksalem.com. See you next week.